Sweden, the country that seemed to be like a model of harmony, tolerance, and shared prosperity, witnessed an ongoing five-day riot that shattered that image.
Oh my God.
These riots took place mainly in city suburbs, where the immigrant population resides. This raised a whole lot of questions about immigration and integration in Sweden.
I think the riots is a very wrong picture of the immigrants.
This documentary intends to explore the nature of the riots.
There was not that much police brutality as the media reported.
We try to find out what are the root causes of such anger.
An expression of a deep frustration coming from a deeply unequal society.
Sweden, the country that seemed to be like a model of harmony, tolerance, and shared prosperity, witnessed an ongoing five-day riot that shattered that image.
Oh my God.
These riots took place mainly in city suburbs, where the immigrant population resides. This raised a whole lot of questions about immigration and integration in Sweden.
I think the riots is a very wrong picture of the immigrants.
This documentary intends to explore the nature of the riots.
There was not that much police brutality as the media reported.
We try to find out what are the root causes of such anger.
An expression of a deep frustration coming from a deeply unequal society.
Only providing work in a society in which the industrial capacity of the country has diminished, then you have a big problem.
What is Sweden today? And what does it mean to be Swedish?
I don't even know what Swedish is.
Standing queue, being low-key, eat pork.
If you marry a Swede, have children, pay taxes, you're always a bit of an outsider here.
Husby, suburb of Stockholm, May 2013. An elderly man is shot by the police.
The thing that triggered the events in Husby was the killing of a 69-year-old man.
He had a knife or a machete that he was waving around, and when police went into his apartment to contain the situation, they shot him dead.
Yeah, that incident happened some days earlier. There was a man that had a knife, and the people in the neighborhood called the police. This man with his knife was in his apartment, and we think that it was a woman as well in this apartment, and we tried to make him surrender and give himself up to the police so we can talk to him. But in the end, they tried many times with negotiator and so on to try to get in contact with this person. But in the end, they had to go in and secure the apartment, and they had to use force to shoot this person for their own security.
Police said that when they communicated with the media, they said that this man was sent to the hospital and that he died in hospital. But the truth was that he was shot in his apartment, and as we understand it now, he was shot through the head.
And several witnesses around in the suburb could hear several shots when they were inside the apartment, and the police was explaining in the report that there was one shot.
And he lay there for 5 hours, and 2 o'clock in the night, he was packed in a sack, in a black sack, and thrown, taken into an ambulance, and residents living in Husby, just very close to this apartment where this man were living, they filmed this whole event when the situation when the ambulance drivers put the black sack into the ambulance.
It looked like the police had hidden some of the circumstances.
It was obvious that the police gave wrong information about what actually happened.
And then started a controversy. Why are the police saying a lot of stories about this situation when people have seen different things?
A couple of days after that, the organization called Megafonen in Husby organized a meeting to declare that they wanted to have the truth about this, what really happened.
On Monday morning, this group that called themselves Megafonen, they called to a press conference. And on their webpage, they wrote down that there had been a lot of police brutality during the night, that we were sending dogs at the people that were living there, and we had been very brutal, and there was and they also reported that it was a lot of injuries because of this police brutality. When I started on Monday morning, we didn't have any reports of people being injured or reports against the police or anything. So it wasn't a picture that it didn't match our picture.
Megafonen is an organization founded in 2008 that claims to fight against social injustice by mobilizing the youth in the suburbs. Their active members are aged 15 to 30. They state in their press conference, "We demand social justice." The police respond with batons and dogs. They say, "Go home. This is our home, and we defend it." As long as our streets are filled with policemen with loaded guns, we can go nowhere. A united suburb can never be defeated.
They made a statement saying that we believe that the police didn't tell the truth. And then the police changed their version of what happened.
Judges began to burn cars in order to make a statement that this is not okay, that the police are coming to their suburbs and treat an older man in this way, and then figure out a lot of lies about the way in which they are acting and the way in which this person was died.
There was not that much police brutality as the media reported. Always when we have riots and demonstrations and so on, it's very difficult to work in a good way.
Young people who feel that they are very much in a situation of being harassed by the police every day.
I have been living in suburbs during almost all my life in Sweden. And I have my son is 23 years. And myself and through my son, I have seen how the police in very explicit ways are very, in some way, quite on alert when they are at the suburbs, in a different way that they are in the in other parts of the city.
We need to use force sometimes and in some situation, and in this situation we have to stop this as soon as possible. We have our rules and we don't step over these rules, but some people, many people in this situation, it could be with a big football match or something. Some people always think that we use too much.
The debate over police brutality could go on forever. Police absolutely deny using excessive force. They even claim, based on this mobile footage, that they were the ones who were attacked. Police also emphasize on their good relations with the community. They blame a small group of young people. The big question is, are the rioters just bored boys making trouble, or is there something deeper going on? To understand this, we need to know more about Husby first.
Husby is dominated by sort of new immigrant groups, and people tend to sort of move away from Husby if they can, and then there come new groups, so it's a very sort of not very established population, and many languages, many school languages, people from all parts of the world actually.
In some of these areas, 90% of the population have an immigrant background.
This killing legitimized by because we are immigrants, because we are second class citizens, and we are regarded as we don't have the status of being real Swedes, so to say.
If you go to Husby as an outsider, you immediately feel a difference. It's nothing like the bright lights of Stockholm Center. It's not the worst place in Europe, but it certainly doesn't feel like Sweden.
There's a divide between central Stockholm, where you see in the tourist pictures and where you see lots of the films are set, and the suburbs. And not only is that a divide financially, but also racially, but also physically. It takes, you know, it's 20 minutes to get out there on the train, so it almost feels like another city entirely.
To know more, we spoke to Ann-Sophie, who has spent many years working with the youths in Husby.
We are in Sweden, in Husby, or what did you say?
It doesn't look like Sweden.
Aha, I understand your question. To me, it's so natural because I work here and I'm here every day. I don't live here, but I am used to it and I love Husby and I love the people living here and the kids. But they are really, really from many, many places from our world.
Multiculturalism is a great phenomenon, but segregation and separation of public, especially on the basis of their ethnicity, could be highly dangerous.
I think that is a problem. I would love to mix people. I think in all situations you get the best result if you mix people.
It's not the Pakistani group living there, it's not a Yugoslav group. No, it's everybody that is not ethnically Swedish. So it's actually proves that it's not the people themselves that isolate themselves, but that if you have a non-Swedish name or, you know, a different look or whatever, you tend to be pushed into these areas.
No, I wouldn't say it's part of Swedish policies that there's sort of there's a plan that okay, put them there. And if you go back before there was sort of such a presence of immigrants in this country, we were quite a segregated country then as well. But then they were all sort of Swedes. So you could frame it in that it's a class segregation. But since class today tends to coincide with being an immigrant, sort of lower class, it becomes sort of segregation between at least certain parts of the immigrant population and other parts of the immigrant population and sort of the average Swede.
Husby today has around 12,000 inhabitants. Around 85% of them are either first or second generation immigrants. On the night of the riots, this area looked like a battlefield.
Every day I was here and reported if there was any damage made here. We were at place most of the time. And we tried to continue with our programs and everything so that everything should be as normal as possible. The feeling was really that people cared for each other. I went out on the market here in Husby, and the square, and I talked to people. Everybody talked to each other. And people came up to me and said, oh, this night I didn't sleep very much because I was afraid of that something should happen. I didn't want to park my car in the parking house because I was afraid. I had to watch it all the time. And well, it was a time of really feeling that people cared for each other.
If the shooting of an old man and the police brutality was the catalyst, then what were the real reasons behind the 5-day riots?
In many of these neighborhoods, the kids, the youth, are don't have the same opportunities, and a lot of them have not finished school and don't have an education. And we all know that without an education, it's really hard to get a job. So we have a high unemployment in Sweden in general among youth, but specifically higher in these neighborhoods.
You have a situation in Husby where those who are between 20 and 25 years of age, 50% of them are neither in work, neither in any form of education. They do nothing. And there is a frustration that is very high.
There are quite many young people, young males who are unemployed, young men who did not make it through the compulsory school and therefore do not make it into the high school, which is voluntary, but more or less a condition for getting work later on.
These uprisings are an expression of a deep frustration coming from a deeply unequal society. Sweden is well known as one of the leading welfare states in the world, or used to be. But since the 1990s, that is no longer the case. There have been serious cutbacks beginning in the early 1990s. And now, 20 years later, we are starting to face the consequences of that. And what happened in Husby is an example of that.
There's a general feeling that society is moving in the wrong direction, and the rich are getting richer, and the poor are getting poorer, and the inequality. So Sweden has been in the past a country with a relative equality. But from that position, in the last 15 years, inequality has risen faster than in any other OECD country.
According to the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, Sweden has the fastest growing income inequality of any other industrial country.
I think there's definitely a gap, and it's growing. In fact, I think the OECD reported, 1995, Sweden was the smallest gap socially between the rich and the poor, and when they did their follow-up survey, found Sweden had slid 14 places.
Sweden is not the differences between rich and poor are not that dramatic, but they have, the gap has widened.
The cities where the middle class live in the center of town, completely in a bubble, and they have no idea of what everyday life looks like in this high-rise suburb. So, in a way, this was a wake-up call.
Juan Velasquez is a researcher at the University of Stockholm. His expertise is on human geography and ethnology. He believes economic factors alone are not enough to solve the segregation problem in Sweden.
When you are only thinking about solving the problems of the Swedish society, only providing work in a society in which the industrial capacity of the country has diminished, then you have a big problem, which is not the immigrants' problem. This is the society's capability to produce jobs.
For him, the only solution to eliminate social segregation is through a model of participatory democracy.
We have to figure out another model. And this model, according to my research, needs to be based in a transition to participatory democracy, instead for the actually working model of deliberative democracy, of representative democracy, in which people are represented by other people. You see, the big majority of people who are participating in decision takings in these places, immigrant places, there are very few immigrants, and the majority of them, when they are allowed to participate, are men. This is the issue. People neglect the question of participation.
Participation in society by immigrants can be achieved if A, they be given a chance by the local population, and B, if they want to participate themselves. Sweden today is divided over the question of who is not doing his duty towards integration. some blame immigrants, and some the failure of integration policies. Sweden Democrats is one of those groups. They are a far-right political group who have a strong anti-immigration stand. This is their election ad, which was banned.
Den 19 september kan du välja invandringsbroms före pensionsbroms. Rösta på Sverigedemokraterna.
Sweden Democrats believe there are simply too many immigrants in Sweden. However, they are considered by the majority of Swedes as a racist political party.
Their presence has been increasing. They've got, I think in some polls, they've gone up to 8-9%.
I think this was pretty new for us, the right extreme groups here. So they, I think, they have their views of immigrants. They don't want them.
I can only say what we report on, and I think there's some that would say there is a hidden racism here, and it shows itself occasionally in some stories that we write. For example, people who send out their CVs and don't get any responses because of their foreign-sounding name. And that's a story that crops up every now and again, and I think it's a similar situation with Polish people in London. And we've had stories that have been extremely popular about immigrants who've, for example, changed their names on their CV to sound more Swedish. So they'll change it to Johan Johansson, and they'll find that they get a lot more job offers, or at least interview calls.
Research has established that the person with the ethnic Swedish name are always prioritized, even with equal merits. The same thing on the housing market. It's very difficult if you have a quote un-Swedish unquote name that you get an apartment outside of these high-rise suburbs on the city's peripheries.
I've got lots of friends who have, for example, let's say a Turkish background, and they don't belong in Sweden because they look different, but they don't belong in Turkey because they were born in Sweden and they seem different. So there's a lot of these people going around, especially as immigration levels are increasing here. They get born here, but they don't feel Swedish.
I also think most Swedes are welcoming and open for new immigrants. Yes.
The face of Sweden is changing. 19% of the Swedish population has its roots outside of the country. 15% were not even born there. This raises the question of what does it mean to be Swedish?
I mean, I don't even know what Swedish is. I mean, well, I don't know what it means to be Swedish. I mean, is it to eat something special, traditionally Swedish, or is it to be blonde, or, I mean.
I know an English man who's been here for about 25 years, and people stop him when he starts talking and say, oh, you're from England. Even though he speaks fluent Swedish, it doesn't matter. You tell that someone's a foreigner and they are a foreigner.
If you look at the Sweden Democrats, sort of, they're perhaps the only ones who've tried to put it on paper. It's a long list of standing queue, being low-key, eat pork, a long sort of line of quite untheorized things that they believe we are doing. Many, many, many of those things, watching Donald Duck at Christmas, which I'm not kidding, that's on their list.
Why not to look at the world in more globally? Why not look at our problems more in relation to these global changes, instead for only remembering the Viking era, and you know, these tribal societies? We are much more complex now, and we are connected with the whole planet in a way that is totally unprecedented.
If we are here and we live together, then we must cooperate. And I think it's interaction between you and me, the natives and the immigrants, of course.
Interaction, or the lack of it. Maybe that was the whole point of the riots in Husby. Young people who wanted to be heard but didn't know how to grab attention. If there was a better interaction between police and youths, immigrants and natives, politicians and the public, maybe the Husby riots would never have happened. Maybe what's missing in our world is more interaction.